in a stadium rich with tradition.
We have that here, and it reeks. And when you come in, teams take the field, they can feel it.
The lights shine the brightest.
Definitely playing at Camp Randall is one of the best places to play in college football.
This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, and The Athletic's Jesse Temple on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
And welcome into The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network. Zach Heilprin, The Athletic's Jesse Temple along with you. All right, the Badgers are on a bye week. We are not. We got a great show coming up. We're going to be chatting about Xander Neville and some other things. Also, got a couple of great interviews. First, Jesse's counterpart with The Athletic in Michigan, Austin Meek. And then coming up later on, going to be chatting with former Badger fullback Matt Bernstein as he makes his triumphant return to the show. Also, ticket giveaway at some point during the show. Got a trivia question then be given out. Follow our Twitter account, the_camp_WI. Give that a follow. And then DM the correct answer to that trivia question to me. And in a change that was suggested by a listener, instead of just doing the first person that answers the question correctly, we're going to give you until Tuesday at noon to get your answer in. And at that point, I'm going to gather all the people that answered correctly, throw names into a hat, and pick a name out. We'll put a video together so that you actually trust me and that I'm actually doing it fairly. So that, because the tickets, they're actually really, really good tickets, and it's a big game coming up next Saturday against Michigan. Before we get to all that, though, we're going to be starting and talking about Xander Neville and another injury for the Badgers tight end. He got a sixth year of eligibility just last month. The NCAA granted him another year of eligibility. He had just started practicing with Wisconsin, and he suffered another injury that was announced on Wednesday that is going to end his career officially. It's truly unfortunate on a couple of different fronts. One, certainly for him, because of all he's been through. I mean, he missed the last two games of 2017, then missed 10 of the 13 games last year, and now, again, works it all the way back, and he's done. He's not going to play again. It's tough.
Yeah, it's awful news for him and for the program. You know, I talked to him last month for a story, and his plan this year actually was to take a gap year. He was applying for medical school, and he said because of the way the process played out, he wouldn't have been able to start until later on down the road. And so he didn't necessarily know what he was going to do this year. And as you said, the NCAA granted him a sixth year of eligibility. And so he thought, I'm going to give it one more shot. I'm going to give it everything I can, but I want to be smart and cautious, because last year in fall camp, he suffered a minor injury that required a minor procedure, and that set him back a little as well. And he said he just felt like it'd been the product of bad luck. And obviously, bad luck hits again this year. But from a football perspective, what he would have provided, just it would have been such a lift for this program to see him come back. You've seen the way that Paul Christ has talked about what Xander could give and the effort that he gave to try and get in. He could be a good blocker. He thought he could be much more effective in the passing game, and considering the limited options that Wisconsin has at tight end, that would have been a big deal. And from a non-football perspective, as I said, you feel awful for somebody to not be able to fulfill their dream and give one last opportunity to go out there and do their best.
Yes, all of that. And now what does Wisconsin do at tight end? I mean, because I don't think they were counting on him to be a huge part of this, right? I think that they were kind of hoping he was going to be able to do something for them. But I just knowing and just thinking about how maybe Paul Christ doesn't, I don't know how Paul Christ thinks about things, but just the way kind of his history, like I don't think he was counting on Xander Neville to be a huge part of this offense at any point this year, even after he had started practicing. Like it was going to be a bonus if they got him back. But now he's gone. We don't know how long Luke Benshall is going to be out. He's still on crutches, as of the game. Don't have Gabe Lloyd. He's out for the entire year. Coy Wehner is not there. Clay Cundiff got a little bit of playing time last week, but he's a true freshman. Jack Essenbach is a former walk-on who's number two on the depth chart right now. And Hayden Rucci is still dinged up as well. So right now it's Jake Ferguson and Jack Essenbach, and then Cormac Sampson, David Mormon, like that's what you're down to right now.
Well, that's exactly what I think we're going to see moving forward is what they've implemented so far. There's not going to be a lot of pass catching out of the tight end position beyond Jake Ferguson, but you've got blockers that you can use. David Mormon, they used as a blocking tight end. Now in week two, Logan Bruss went down with an injury, and so he couldn't play right tackle, and they put Mormon at right tackle, which certainly speaks to Mormon's versatility, and that stands out. And then, as you said, Cormac Sampson, another guy that they can put in as a blocking tight end. And
he's played tight end.
And I know that you went over the touchdown runs from the Central Michigan game, and he was in on most of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, on JT's three touchdown runs, they ran the same play, and it was the same formation, and it was the same guys on the line. And I actually was wrong about this last week. They also run Garrett Groshek's touchdown in the fourth quarter on Graham Mertz's drive was also the same play, but to the right side as well. So like they ran all five of their rushing touchdowns on the goal line, exact same play. But yeah, the three that, and I don't know if Cormack was in on the others, but he was certainly in on JT's three, and they ran behind him and also ran behind John Chenal and Mason Stocky with those two fullback sets. I guess inverted wishbone, I guess is what you would call it. So it was, yeah, I mean, they have options blocking-wise, but again, Jake is the only one that can actually go out and catch passes on a regular basis that we've seen. Maybe Hayden Rushi can, maybe Clay Cundiff can, and maybe even, you know, Jack Eisenbach can. We just haven't seen it.
I would say if there's any year where you were in this situation and felt better about it, it would be this year because of the other options you have. And as we've talked about, the four wide receivers that they have, and I know we'll continue to talk about it because I imagine they're going to make a big impact the rest of this season too. Like, that opens up a lot of things offensively. Certainly you would love to have a second tight end that could catch passes. But even if you had a healthy Luke Benchoal, it didn't necessarily mean that he was going to catch a ton of passes. I think he would have certainly had more opportunities. But primarily, the guy is 276 pounds.
Yeah, but you saw him in the bowl game. He had a touchdown called back.
He had it called back. And yes, I know, and he has it in him. We know that.
Right. And I know the only reason I say this is because I mentioned it to Joe Rudolph during media day. Was like, Luke Benchoal is like 280 pounds. What the heck are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with him? He goes, well, he was actually that big in the bowl game too, and you saw him go out there and catch passes. He's got that in him.
But I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I don't know how many catches he would have wound up with. Sander certainly
Neville,
it would have been a better
Sander
option.
Neville has 8 catches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like he was some kind of, you know, prolific receiver, but he gives you the option of it. Like,
correct,
you actually have to think about him going out for a route, whereas for the most part, David Mormon and Cormack Sampson are not going to. Though Cormack Sampson did play tight end in high school and actually was, up until last year, was there. So, I mean, he's at least got that in his bag. And because they've put it out on social media, David Mormon was catching touchdown passes in fall camp. So it's not like there aren't plays in there for him to do it. It's just not the same.
Yeah, I think the coaching staff is always going to put out the team that gives them the best chance to win based on the circumstances. And if it means you've got an extra blocking tight end, I know it hasn't mattered so far. And so I think it's a pretty good situation to be in where you've got these big 300-plus pound dudes that you can use essentially as an extra offensive lineman. I mean, that's a great scenario.
Right. Maybe instead of, obviously, Wisconsin does not have a game this week. Maybe instead of that, I'll just go back and watch both games and think about how many 3 wide receiver sets and 4 wide receivers, not even 4 wide receivers, but 3 wide receivers at tight end, you know, just how much they've spread the ball, because I think it's been a ton. I mean, we've seen Danny Davis, A.J. Taylor, Kendrick Pryor, and Quintez Cephus out there together a bunch. Not at the same time, but like in different 3 wide receiver packages that I think that they're probably going to that stuff more than they have in the past. And maybe that'll be a good project for this weekend instead of watching Wisconsin football. Well, I should say instead of watching a real game, going back and look at those games, because I think they have changed how they've gone about it. Either way, Wisconsin does not have a game this week. They do play Michigan next week. I'm interested to see what that line is going to be. Like, before the game or before the year, I think Michigan was favored by more than a touchdown, at least going back into the spring when they first put out some lines. It was more than a touchdown. I'd be shocked if it's more than a touchdown. I'd be shocked if Wisconsin isn't actually favored in this game.
I think I would be, too, based on what we've seen through the first 2 weeks, and that's all you can base it on. My big question is probably the same question that everyone else has, is how good is this Wisconsin team, and what does what has happened in the first 2 weeks actually mean? I have no idea. They've outscored the first two teams 110-0. You know what? The last time this happened was 2013. They won 45-0, 48-0 in games against UMass and Tennessee Tech. That team lost 4 games. That team lost a bowl game. So it doesn't really mean that much, but I think it has kind of put the nation on notice that maybe you underrated Wisconsin entering the season.
Right. They lost that third. Well, there's
the Arizona State
there's
game.
An asterisk, next to that that first game that they lost. Joel Stavi's knee was down. I'm pretty confident about that. Either way, and I don't even know if the guy makes a field goal. What was that kicker's name from that game? Was it Kyle French?
Kyle French.
Ah, yes. Would have had a shot to win that game. Didn't get the opportunity to do it. Either way, but that was a difference. That was a different team. That was year one of the Gary Anderson era. Yes, they rolled, obviously, those first 2 games. Tennessee Tech was an FCS opponent. I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it is.
Right? I mean, we kind of think that this team is better than that team was.
I'm just using it as a baseline for a comparison, because it's the last time that this happened where they just completely destroyed two opponents, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is, how good is this team? And
are we going to know at the end of Saturday's game how good this team is? Do you think this will be it, or based on what we've seen from Michigan the first 2 weeks, is this still going to be like, I don't know, who knows? We'll have to wait until they go to Ohio State.
I mean, I'm more inclined to say that we're going to know a lot about the team after the Michigan game, even though Michigan hasn't played its best football to this point, and people in Ann Arbor are probably freaking out because they were the Big Ten East preseason favorites. This is a really big game. Michigan is still a top 10 team, and Michigan's defense, for all the talk about how inconsistent the offense has been with all the fumbles and the inability to score, I think the defense has been relatively solid considering what they did against Army. Yes, Army's going to run the ball 60 plus times, but Army only averaged about 3 yards per carry, and it wasn't Michigan's defense that let that game go into double overtime. It was the fact that Michigan's offense couldn't do very much. So to me,
turn the ball over,
that's a big thing. So to me, I think we're going to know a lot about this team. You could say every year, well, wait till this game, we'll wait till this game, but part of me thinks enjoy what's happened so far, and if Wisconsin beats Michigan at home, a top 10 team, then the Badgers are going to be in the top 10 after the first month of the season. And I think certainly we'll have earned it.
And they'll probably be favored in every game leading up to that game in October against, you know, at Ohio State. I'll be honest, if they win this game, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to wait till that Ohio State game, because that's going to be the biggest game on the calendar that day, and probably the biggest game for Wisconsin in quite some time.
Assuming Wisconsin can keep winning, and I don't think that's a gimme, because the home games are still Northwestern and Michigan State, and maybe those teams aren't as good as previous years. Northwestern ran away with the West last year, and Wisconsin had to play in Evanston.
They also who else did they lose to? That Northwestern. Northwestern wasn't very good last year.
They went 8-1 in the Big
Ten. Yeah, but I mean,
it wasn't very good early. But I'm just saying, never take anything for granted and say just because Wisconsin beats Michigan that they're going to roll up and be undefeated when they play Ohio State. Certainly, Badgers fans, we would all love that because it would be a great storyline. But either way, I do think that this Michigan game is going to tell us a lot about how good Wisconsin really is.
Yeah, you're right. They've got Northwestern, got a big game against Kent State.
I detect a hint of sarcasm there.
Then Michigan State, then at Illinois, you never know, and then Ohio State.
Illinois has a top 15 run defense. Now, stats really don't matter at this point of the season, but I'm throwing that out anyway just to let you know that maybe they're better than the punching bag we've made them out to be.
Yeah, either way, we'll get a better idea of who Wisconsin is, and obviously a better idea of who Michigan is after this game as well. You mentioned Michigan's defense. Wisconsin's offense has been prolific, right? 110 points, fantastic. Passing game was on point last week. The running game hasn't been remarkable, as I think a lot of people thought it would be, and Michigan was able to stop the run against Army. Is that potentially a concern? And to me, it would be, at least looking at some of the passing plays last week, pass protection specifically on the inside, that might be one of the guard spots. There might be a bit of an issue there.
I think the running game should be one of the bigger storylines coming into this Michigan game. It's easy to probably not pay attention to some of the faults or things that haven't gone up to the level that we've seen before, because Wisconsin has obliterated teams and the passing game was unbelievable in week two against Central Michigan. But if you look at some numbers, and I had some advanced stats in a mailbag that published last week about the run game, comparing the running game this year to the running game last year. Again, I know this is a small sample size, but on plays that were run to the left side, that's the perspective of the offense here, 5.3 yards per carry, and last year it was 7.8 yards per carry. So that's 2.5 yards fewer per rush to the left side. And on all these numbers, to the left, to the middle, to the right, the highest Wisconsin is in any of those is 5.9 yards per carry. And last year, they were 6.3 yards up the middle, 6.5 yards to the right, 7.8 to the left. When you take loss of yardage on runs and you've only had two games, that's going to drastically impact this. But in that opener against South Florida, there were 6 rushes that went for a loss of yards. There were 4 rushes that went for no gain. And it's a new offensive line. So I think that has a part of this. And you've got different packages, as we've mentioned, with the tight end. So you've maybe got different guys blocking in roles that you didn't anticipate. But I do think it's something to watch. But how good is it that you can say this about Wisconsin football, that 5.9 yards per carry is considered below average?
Right, right. And you haven't had the 70-yard run either. Like, you haven't had that so far. Like, JT had 38 and 37, I think, in that first game. But he hasn't had, like, a JT 65-yard run yet.
The 88-yard touchdown run against Nebraska type situation.
Right, you haven't seen that yet. He's been close, but he has not broken that out. They've had explosive plays, and then I mean the runs, any run over 15 yards is considered explosive, so he's had explosive runs in that sense, but not the long runs that we've come to expect from him, and that certainly will hurt the average as well. But you're right. I totally agree with you. I think the running game has not been up to what we all expected it to be, and that is certainly a concern. If you want to dig into concerns about an offense that's averaging, 55 points a game, that would be my concern.
But I think this is the time when you kind of have to start looking at what the potential concerns are.
For sure.
Because the competition is ratcheted up to another level, despite the fact that Michigan hasn't lived up to its expectations at this point of the season. The defense has been sound, and I go back to last year, and maybe that's not fair because they were two totally different teams, but you look at what happened when Wisconsin went to Ann Arbor. The offense could only run 49 total plays. They could not do anything. I know this is a different group. You send guys to the NFL, you bring new guys in, but Michigan has been known. I think Michigan has developed a reputation for a really solid defense.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why this is such an intriguing matchup.
For sure. Don Brown is a fantastic defensive coordinator, and you think about all the talent that they lost to the NFL, and yet they've been pretty darn good so far this year. But I will say, you think back to the 2017 game here, Wisconsin struggled to move the ball that year as well. And outside of a 50-yard late, I think it was a fourth quarter run by JT to get them out of their own territory. It was like a close to 50-yard run. They bottled him up pretty good. And except for a couple of drives, they bottled up the passing game. But that was also one of Alex Hornibrook's shining moments, I guess you would say, like the throws to A.J. Taylor to jumpstart that offense and win that game. But I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Like, I don't think either defense is going to allow it to be where it's going to be like 38-35 or something like that. I don't see that. So Wisconsin is going to have to run the ball, and it won't be easy against a Michigan defense like this. One final thing before we get into our interviews. Graham Mertz.
Yes, we've gotten 19 minutes into the show, and we haven't even talked about Graham Mertz playing his first reps.
Right. So is he transferring, Jesse? No, he's not? All right. No, but I get where people... I understand where people are coming from, even though it's kind of ridiculous. Because you get this highest-ranked quarterback you've ever gotten before. You all expect him to come in and play because you don't think very much of Jack Cohn. Jack Cohn plays well. Graham gets some playing time. He looks okay, pretty good. And now you're like, well, when's he ever going to get to play? If he doesn't, if Jack's going to play this well, why is he going to want to stick around?
So here's where I'm at on this. I wrote a story about Graham's debut that published on Tuesday, a few days after Wisconsin's game against Central Michigan. Just a deeper look inside what his debut was like for him and how teammates viewed it. And it was funny because in the comments section, the first comment was about, I still think that Graham is going to wind up in the transfer portal. And then all the rest of the comments were either saying that, no, that's ridiculous, or a couple that thought, well, it's not so outlandish to think he could transfer. And I was asked a question for my mailbag, and it became the lead question in this mailbag about whether he would transfer. And it is complete nonsense to me, and there are several reasons for that. You've laid out that I think people thought Graham would walk in and day one be the starter, and that hasn't been the case. But first of all, Jack has more than earned being the starting quarterback, and I think Graham, he sees the big picture. There are a lot of things to consider. He picked Wisconsin because he trusts this coaching staff. He could have gone anywhere. He could have jumped ship and wound up at Alabama or Clemson or anywhere else, but he trusts this staff. I think he's pretty level-headed for a guy who had as many accolades as he has. And Chase Wolf has said he doesn't act like a five-star guy. He's just one of the guys. So I think that's a part of it. And just if you step back, it wouldn't make any sense for him to transfer and then have to sit out next season and then try and start all over at a new school. He could stay here. Jack could play next year in his senior year, and Graham could be well positioned in 2021 to be a three-year starting quarterback. Now, I would never take anything away from Chase Wolf and say that he couldn't potentially win the job, because I think he's been fairly good, but it's all set up for Graham. And so just taking a step back, it would make no sense. So I know a lot of quarterbacks transfer. Like in the 2016 class, USA Today had a story, 17 of the top 25 quarterback recruits wound up transferring because they either couldn't win the quarterback job or couldn't maintain the quarterback job. I think it's a different circumstance here, though.
We'll find out. But he, as he said, last week, he's expecting to play four games, you know, or, you know, it, actually, what did he say? He said he thought it'd be great if he got to play four games. It'd be amazing. He's got one down. He's got three more to go. But again, we don't know what happens if Jack Cohn were to go down.
Exactly.
We don't know that. In your opinion, right now, after what we saw this past week, who goes in?
I don't know the answer, and I said this last week that I don't know the answer because I think the staff would have to take a hard look at this because of the potential that Graham has. Do you want to burn that red shirt and play him? Now, if it was for the rest of this season,
it's not even burning. It's not even burning it, though.
If
he's your best option, you're not burning it. You're putting your best option in there.
That's true. I don't know because I think Chase also gives you a good opportunity to win, and I feel like if you go with Graham, then you're all in on him now until maybe it's different. It'd be different next year, but you'd have a controversy, dare I say, on your hands. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but I do think that you're right. And I asked Graham about what the plan is, and as you mentioned, he hasn't had official discussions with the staff, but he says, I am redshirting. At least that is the plan. Now, things change if someone were to get injured, but that's the other thing is you're always one play away, as we've seen at Wisconsin, even last year when Alex Hornibrook couldn't play and Jack Cohn, who was supposed to redshirt, wound up playing and not using that redshirt. So give the guy a break is the other thing I'd say. We're two games into the season. He just took his first reps. Let him have the opportunity to enjoy his freshman season and take him at his word that he enjoys being here and is genuinely excited for what's happening.
Now time to bring on Jesse's counterpart at Michigan. It is Austin Meek. He's with The Athletic. Austin, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Probably a little bit better than Michigan fans right now, as Michigan struggled here these first 2 weeks. Not so much the first week, but then the second week against Army needed overtime, double overtime, to get out of that one alive. Is there a panic button being pushed in Ann Arbor right now by fans?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm guessing you guys could probably hear that sigh of relief from Michigan all the way over in Madison when that game ended, because it was just the whole day Michigan was just on the edge. You know, that it was one of those games where one play away, really, if Army makes one more play at any point in that game, Michigan probably loses that game and the season looks a whole lot different. You know, the service academies, it's always a different kind of matchup. The Michigan coaches had been talking even before the season about how long they had been preparing for this Army game because the triple option is just different than anything else they're going to see this year. So I think there was a lot of relief for sure that Michigan got out of there with that win. Maybe not panic, but definitely some anxiety about what that means for the future.
Well, I know Michigan beat Middle Tennessee fairly handily, but got off to a bit of a sluggish start. And so from an offensive perspective, Michigan's fumbled 8 times and lost 5 of them. What is going on with Michigan offensively?
Yeah, the fumbles are one of the big things they're trying to figure out. Josh Gattis, the offensive coordinator, said this week that they're going to see if they can get a voodoo expert in to try to get the fumble curse broken, because they only lost 3 fumbles all season last year. They've already lost 5 this year. A lot of it has been from the quarterbacks. I think 5 of the 8 fumbles they've had have been by the quarterbacks, and I think 4 of them have been from Shea Patterson. Fumbled a couple times against Middle Tennessee, first play of the game. He fumbled, which kind of set the tone for how that day went for their offense. So ball security is a huge thing for them. They've got to get that shored up. You know, partly it's maybe a little bit of bad luck. It's also just the fact that the quarterbacks have been hit, and they haven't done a very good job of taking care of the ball when they've been hit.
Well, let's dive into the Wisconsin-Michigan matchup. It's certainly the toughest challenge that Wisconsin has had to this point, since there really hasn't been much of a challenge in the first 2 weeks. I know Michigan's offense has gone to a no-huddle spread. In what ways do you think Michigan can challenge this Wisconsin defense? Because the Badgers haven't given up a point. They've been fantastic, but honestly, I don't think we really know how good they are.
Yeah, obviously it's going to be a confident defense, you know, when you pitch back-to-back shutouts. I think the thing that we're still trying to figure out with Michigan is what really is their offensive identity under Josh Gattis, because there was a lot of discussion about how they were moving to this no-huddle spread offense, and I don't think anybody really knew what that was going to look like exactly. And we've seen, you know, we've seen some clues, but I still think it's kind of up in the air, because when you look at the personnel of this team, I think, you know, the one thing that stands out to you is Michigan has these wide receivers who I'm not sure that anybody, you know, in the Big Ten has three guys who can do what Michigan's can do, and that's with Donovan Peoples-Jones in the equation, and he's been hurt. You know, the hope is that he'll be back for the Wisconsin game, but you really thought that the strength of this offense was going to be Shea Patterson going down the field to Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black and Nico Collins. We've seen a little bit of that, but we haven't seen a lot of it. And I think if there's one thing that has people kind of nervous, in the second half against Army, Michigan got really conservative. They ran the ball on about two-thirds of their snaps in the second half, a lot of up-the-middle runs. And we just didn't see, you know, the sort of wide-open offensive attack that people thought we were going to see from this offense. But I think that if, you know, if they're going to settle on an identity, and if there's one thing that they should be able to do, it's to exploit the playmakers that they have at receiver.
And I think a lot of people thought coming into this year that Shea Patterson, he was a Heisman candidate. And I'm wondering, you know, just looking at his numbers, and obviously you talked about the fumbles, but what is missing from him that's not allowing them to be the offense a lot of people thought they were going to be coming in? What is not happening for him?
Well, number one, he hasn't been completely healthy. He got hurt on the first play of the first game and has been dealing with an oblique injury. And that limited him in the first game. Jim Harbaugh said Shea Patterson wasn't necessarily limited in what he could do against Army, but when you watch the game, it sure looked like he was in some ways. It looked like he was hesitant to pull the ball on his own reads. It looked like some of his throws were a little bit off, and it looked like he was just getting antsy in the pocket, that any time there was any pressure, he was going to try to take off and run. I think we'll see a healthier Shea Patterson against Wisconsin, and then the question will be, if he's back to near 100%, do we see a better Shea Patterson, a more effective Shea Patterson? Because he's certainly been inconsistent, you know, between the turnovers and some of the throws that he's missed just by a couple inches, and some of the reads he's made. I think one thing about Josh Gattis' offense is it's pretty complex, and there are a lot of different reads to it. You know, there's a lot of RPO, you know, a lot of zone read, and maybe Shea Patterson is having to make some reads that he didn't have to make last year. So there's a lot that he's got to process in a split second in this offense, and I think he's still getting comfortable with some of that.
Well, let's flip to the other side of the ball. Wisconsin is coming off one of the best passing games in program history, and I know Michigan will be a significantly tougher test defensively. I think they've been fairly sound. I know Army ran the ball 60-something times, but only averaged like 3 yards a carry. So in what ways do you think Michigan can challenge Wisconsin, both in the passing game and in the run game defensively?
Yeah, it really was two totally different matchups for Michigan in the first two games. Middle Tennessee was kind of like a run and shoot. You know, they wanted to spread you out. They really attacked on the perimeter. And then, of course, Army is the triple option. You know, they ran it, as you said, they ran it, I think, 61 times. The stat that jumped out to me is Army ran it 61 times. And only one of those runs went for 10 yards or more. So Michigan really did a nice job defensively against Army's triple option. But I don't really think that either of these two teams that Michigan has played will give us a real great read on how their defense is going to match up with offenses in the Big Ten. Sort of the concern going in with Michigan's defense was the interior defensive line was pretty thin. They've had some injuries there, but they don't really have a guy, you know, in the middle of that that defensive line that you look at and just say, you know, that guy is a run stuffer or a disruptor. Carlo Kemp played really well against Army, and maybe he's developing into that. But I think there has been some concern that when Michigan starts playing some of these bigger Big Ten teams, and Wisconsin is a great example of that, that these teams may be able to push them around a little bit up front.
Hey, Austin, just in terms of what you've seen through the first two games, first of all, what was your opinion of this team before the year, and has it changed after these first two games? Have the expectations in your mind for what this team can be changed after what you've seen the first two games?
Well, you know, Michigan was the preseason favorite in the Big Ten in the minds of a lot of people. And when I looked at it, on paper. You know, that made sense to me. Four starters back on the offensive line, a senior quarterback coming back, a lot of pieces coming back on defense. I don't know that right now I would say that Michigan looks like the favorite in the Big Ten. I just think there are too many teams that have played too well through the first couple weeks of the season, Wisconsin being one of those, to say that right now Michigan is still the favorite based on the fact that they, you know, they had to get out of there with their life against Army and had a little bit of a struggle at times against Middle Tennessee as well. I still think this could be a really good Michigan team. I think it's a possibility that at some point that switch is going to flip with Josh Gattis's offense, and we're going to start to see a lot of the things we heard about in the preseason. But right now, Michigan looks like a team that's still trying to figure out its identity, and a team that's really got to get better if they want to have a chance to win the Big Ten.
I know this is going to be a question that you probably get a lot, and you think it's probably pretty annoying. I'm going to ask it anyways. Jim Harbaugh's status as coach, if they don't turn and don't turn into the team that everybody thought they was going to be, is there a feeling around Ann Arbor at all that people are starting to sour on him as the head coach? And I know it'll probably a lot have to do with whether they're able to beat Ohio State or not, but is there any of that kind of feeling? And I know it's two games in, but the tenure of Jim Harbaugh has not been what a lot of people thought it was going to be to this point.
Yeah. Well, I've only been here a couple months, so I'm not sick of anything yet. I'm sure I'll hear that question more as the season goes on, especially if Michigan doesn't get it going. I think it's a function of, A, the expectations were so high when Jim Harbaugh came here. I think they're in the minds of a lot of people, this was going to be Nick Saban in Alabama. This was going to be a Michigan team that was going to be in the playoff more often than not, a Michigan team that was going to be winning Big Ten championships. And that's not what it's been. You know, they have been a good team since Jim Harbaugh has been here. You win 10 games three out of 4 years in college football. There's not a lot of other programs that can say that, but it's just the fact that when Jim Harbaugh came here, it wasn't just about we're going to be a good team. It was about we're going to be a championship caliber team, and they haven't been that. And losing four straight years to Ohio State under Jim Harbaugh has not helped things either. So if you talk to the fan base, there certainly is a feeling of frustration or impatience about when are we going to see the type of team that we envisioned under Jim Harbaugh. But I think you do have to separate a little bit that impatience among the fan base from the reality that if Michigan didn't make a change, what are they going to do? You know, if Jim Harbaugh can't build the program that you want here, who's the coach out there that you can hire that's going to do it? I just think from an administrative standpoint with Michigan, they're kind of all in with this thing. And certainly, you know, Jim Harbaugh has experienced enough success here that it's not as if, like, you know, it's just been a disaster. It just hasn't quite been what a lot of the fan base is hoping for. And so I think you just kind of got to play it out, and you got to see where it goes from here. The hope with this team was with a more modern offense, that would be the thing that would push them over the edge and be able to take that last step, but we just haven't seen that yet.
All right, Austin, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and in no way will I hold this potential projection against you in the future, but we're still a little ways out from kickoff. What is your take on what will happen when Michigan comes up to Camp Randall Stadium? Because the last time these teams met in Ann Arbor a year ago, the Wolverines pulled away in the second half, but obviously two very different teams this time around.
Yeah, boy. I tell you what, I'm going to kind of hedge here a little bit.
Sounds like something I do.
You guys at The Athletic just love the hedge.
That's my favorite thing on this show, Austin, so you're in good company.
All right. Yeah, I'm in good company here. The Michigan team that I've seen the last 2 weeks is not going to beat the Wisconsin team that I've seen the last 2 weeks. If Wisconsin plays the way they played in their first two games and Michigan plays the way they played in their first two games, I think Wisconsin's going to win this game pretty handily. I expect to see a better Michigan team than I've seen in the first 2 weeks. And I expect, you know, and I think you guys probably are in the same boat, Wisconsin is going to maybe take a little step back to earth when they face Big Ten caliber opponents. So I think it's going to be a really competitive game. But I think Michigan's going to get better. You know, if Michigan doesn't get better during this bye week, then they easily could lose this game and lose it by a couple touchdowns.
So just on the record then, you are not picking one way or the other. You're not picking a winner.
I right now today I'm going to pick Wisconsin. How about that? Based on what I've seen the first 2 weeks, I'm going to pick Wisconsin. But you gave me the option to change that opinion by this time next week, so I might hold you to that.
All right, Austin. Hey, thank you very much.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
All right, there he is. Austin Meek from The Athletic. All right, as promised, going to be giving away a pair of tickets to the Michigan game this Saturday. And all you have to do is answer this trivia question. Wisconsin has won 4 straight home games over Michigan, with the first coming back in 2005. Which Badgers player scored what proved to be the winning touchdown that year? If you know the answer, all you have to do is follow our Twitter account, @the_camp_WY, and direct message us your answer. We're going to give everyone until noon on Tuesday to submit their answer. That's the 17th, September 17th. At that point, I'm going to put everyone's name into a hat and draw a name out. We'll put a video up there announcing the winner. Just remember, you're going to need to be able to come and pick up the tickets in Madison at our office on the west side at some point before Saturday. Whoever wins, I'll get you the address and the hours that you can stop by to pick them up. So again, which Badgers player scored what proved to be the winning touchdown against Michigan in 2005? All right, now to welcome on a very special guest. You obviously know him quite well, my host the past 2 years. It is former Wisconsin fullback Matt Bernstein. Bernie, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going well, man. We haven't given up any points on defense, and our offense looks they could beat the Jets right now.
Well, that ain't saying much, but I did. I did appreciate, though, your Brooks Bollinger jersey at the Jets game last week.
Dude, I can't wear anything else.
Yeah.
And I have to shotgun a beer in a Brooks Bollinger jersey.
Which you did, of course.
Which I did.
And posted a video of it, which you can find, what? Did you post it on the on Facebook, on the fullback site? Because what's the fullback club? What's it called?
Wisconsin Fullback Fan Club.
Alumni? Yeah, that's right.
Wisconsin Badger Fullback Fan Club. It's like way too long for me to even remember.
Yeah, that's right. So you can see that, right? I mean, you posted you posted on Instagram too.
It's on Instagram for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to post to the fullback thing because I think a lot of people will enjoy that. Because
I also took it down. Two people recognized the jersey. I'm surprised.
Like recognized it without seeing the last name, or
yeah.
Okay. Because I recognized it right away simply because I believe you'd worn it before. So, but hey, that's Brooks Bollinger. Obviously, you're going to wear a Brooks Bollinger jersey, a Jets jersey. He played there for all of, what, 6 games? 7 games?
But I think he was there for like 3 years. But they threw him in at the end of a season when they were like, I think they were like 2-8 or 2-9, something like everyone was hurt. And they threw him in, basically like sent them out to the Wolves. Yeah. It was horrible.
The Vikings did that too one time. I remember they played the Packers and he got thrown in there. It was not pretty.
Not at all.
Either way, you are out in New York now. How's everything going out there?
Dude, New York's New York, man. It's a happening, crazy place. I kind of wish I was back in Madison, though. That's, you know, and I will be back this coming weekend. Or not this weekend, next weekend.
You're coming for Michigan, huh?
Oh, yeah. I can't miss it, man. I can't miss it.
Because, and I'm not sure why, but I'll let you answer the question. You hate Michigan more than any other team. Why?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Like, I never beat Iowa,
yeah,
and they are second on my chart. I just think Michigan people think they're the best. Everything about them is the best. Their colors, their helmet, their history, their stadium. Yeah, like blah blah. Like it's just so frustrating and annoying. I mean, they're like, dude, you guys can't beat Ohio State any year in a row or ever.
Accurate.
So I don't know. I think it just weighs on me. You know, Tom Brady played for the Michigan team, and now he's on the Patriots, who embarrasses the Jets. I just think it's a constant.
Yeah.
Michigan is constantly annoying me. People here in New York think that going to Michigan's better than Harvard. I'm like, what the heck is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
And when I see people wearing Michigan stuff in my workout or in the street, I try to push them down.
little nice little shoulder as you're going by, or perhaps pushing them out of the way on the subway.
Yeah, with no excuse me, just like straight pushing.
Yeah, no, well, and that I get it. There, I mean, you were involved in some really good Michigan games. Obviously, actually, the last time Wisconsin lost at home to Michigan was 2001. I believe that was your redshirt year, so you didn't have to deal with that was the Brett Bell game, right?
Yeah, okay. The Brett Bell game.
But you okay? I'm not. We won't go to that one. We won't delve into that one. We'll go.
Oh my God, Brett! He'll never live that down.
No, he won't. I mean, and you know, Brett played a lot of good football, but that's the one that he's going to be probably remembered for at Wisconsin, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But either way, the better game certainly was 2005, and I know you were injured, but you played in that game, and Calhoun went off, but it was the John Stocco late touchdown run. What's your favorite memory for that one?
From that one, just the win. You know, it was so special. It was a beautiful night to beat Michigan. You know, I think we lost in 01. I don't think we played in 02. We lost in 03 there. I don't think we played in 04. So it was just really nice to beat it. You know, to beat Michigan it was my last game. Sad to say, so yeah. It was nice to go out on top. And it was great for Stocco. Like, dude, just really shouldered some guy up, like running in there. It was great to see.
And that was and that whole story around that play was not called by the offensive coordinator. It was suggested by Henry Mason, the wide receivers coach, correct?
Which is amazing, right?
Yeah.
Coach Mason was a fantastic coach.
Awesome.
You know, he knew his stuff, and I don't know, he just saw something and it worked to perfection.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Calhoun had carried the ball or gotten the ball so many times that night that I'm sure they were probably focused on him more than anything, but. Yeah, I mean it was a perfect call, and you're not expecting it because it's Stocco and he's not usually going to take off and run. But yeah, that was a special game. That was in a year or a couple years of really special games, like special endings. Obviously in 04 with Purdue, and then 05 with the Michigan game, and then a couple weeks later the Minnesota game. It was you were involved in quite a few memorable games that actually went your way. You can go back to 2003 with Ohio State. There are a lot of good games that way.
I mean, you talk about Ohio State 2004, you know, 01 Ohio. I mean, I feel like that was the era of, like, just straight-out fist fights.
Yeah.
Like to the end, like Coach would always say, you know, fourth quarter, you got to win in the fourth quarter, because these were always straight-up fist fight, like, bloodbaths. And, I mean, it really was like, let's run power eye power out of the eye until we really can't do it anymore.
Right.
You know, I watched some of that film of, like, me as, like, a youngster.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, we really did the same plays, and I really ran into a lot of dudes full speed. Like, man, I don't know how smart that was.
Well,
yeah, there was a lot of special endings, though, for sure. A lot of just, like, huge individual, like, Lee Evans had that 5-touchdown game against Michigan, you know.
Michigan
not
State.
Not to pump my own,
Michigan
but
State.
Penn State.
Yep.
Yeah, against Michigan State.
Yep.
You know, I had that crazy game against Penn State.
Not to pump my own. I'll pump you for you. That was an awesome game. Love the game. One of my favorite games. Awesome.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite games too. You know, and you just had like special Calhoun in the 05 season. Like, who knew he would take off that much? Like, we all knew he was awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was a special guy. Imagine if we had him and AD for like 4 years.
Yeah, that would have been
nuts.
That would have been amazing. Yeah, I mean, him going to Colorado was kind of like a shot in the gut to Wisconsin, but then to get him back and get him for just, he only played one season at Wisconsin, and it was one of the better seasons by a running back that's ever been here. I mean, you think about some of the stuff he did, and just, you know, he was the last guy before Jonathan Taylor in the opener this year to have two receiving touchdowns in a game. He carried the ball over 300 times, and he's not Jonathan Taylor big. He was not that type of guy back then. But he may have worn down towards the end of that season, but he was fantastic. In the bowl game, you guys went out there and rolled Auburn and Alvarez's last game. There were a lot of fun games. There were no Big Ten titles, not to stick that in there a little bit, but there were a lot of fun, really fun games. And, you know, there's a lot of success, just not the success all the way to a Big Ten title.
So, right. You're talking about
go ahead.
A good transition into JT, who has, I mean, just... I don't see anything he doesn't have, unless you tell me what you think.
Well, no, you're the fullback. You're the one that watches film and can see and knows and know what's supposed to be happening there. I mean, he's been fantastic. He's been amazing. I'm struggling with whether to put him over Melvin Gordon in terms of the best running back that's played at Wisconsin. But by the end of this year, it may be impossible not to.
I mean, listen, if he wins the Heisman, he's the best. he'll be up there. Him and Ron Dane.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, the dude has what? He dropped one pass. That's the only bad thing he's done so far.
Pretty much.
He has one drop. That's it.
Yeah.
I just, like, his vision. And first off, the line is playing very well. The fullbacks obviously are always playing. We're savages. So
obviously.
I don't need to talk about them.
No, obviously. We do need to talk about them, but go ahead and finish your thought on JT, because I do want to ask you about the fullbacks.
But what's great about from last year to this year is that guy now is a pass threat. When I think they didn't trust him maybe last year, this year, dude, if that guy's on the field, you have to pay attention to him. If it's a passing down, if it's third and 30, like he is the, like, the impact player every down. And it's just, I mean, he's got everything. He's got the speed. He's got the vision, which I think is amazing. He cuts back on a counter, and he, like, what, in the first quarter or second quarter, and he's got 10 yards.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't cut back on counters. and he's got the strength and the ability, and I'm just, you know, like, he turned down, what, an academic scholarship to Harvard?
He had scholarship. Yeah. I don't know if that's ever been mentioned on the telecast before, but yes, he had an opportunity to go to Harvard.
For me, that's something special. You know, not many human beings would do that.
Yeah, no, he's been amazing.
Yeah.
But you mentioned running power until they could stop it, right? Well, Wisconsin this past week against Central Michigan ran the exact same play. It was an inverted wishbone with the two fullbacks leading the way, a guard pulling, and then running behind the jumbo tight end and Cormac Sampson. They ran it five times. I should say ran it on all three of JT's touchdowns, then ran it to the right side on Nakia Watson's touchdown, then ran it, I think, the right side on Garrett Groshek. So they ran it five times, the exact same play on the goal line, scored every time.
Well, here's the thing. When you're on a defense, you have four guys who are not going to – so you have two corners and you have two safeties usually, right?
Yep.
Those guys cannot take on block. I mean, they can. They're just not going to do it well. So you are automatically winning with nine of, like, you know, these huge, huge dudes. Some of those tight ends are humongous. I think some of them are O-linemen.
Yeah, Cormac Sampson was the converted offense lineman that was playing tight end last week.
Right. So you're putting 2,000 pounds on the field compared to Central Michigan's 1,000 pounds. Like, you're going to win.
Yeah.
And then you have two fullbacks who are leading the way. Those guys are, I mean, to be honest, like, even in because I'm obsessed with them, but they both have been playing very good football blocking-wise.
Yeah, and they're needed, right? I mean, because you don't...
And they're needed.
Because you don't have tight ends. You have one true healthy tight end that you feel comfortable playing when the game's still in doubt, and that's Jake Ferguson. You know, that's it. So you need Josh Schnall and you need Mason Stocke to be, like, kind of in that tight end role. Even, you know, they're not going to be putting their hand on the ground and being inline blockers or anything like that, but they're going to be leading the way. And Stocke on the first touchdown for JT just absolutely crushed a guy. I think that clip's gone viral.
It was so pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad. Like, someone needs to call that guy's mom, the Central Michigan guy. But, dude, I told you, you can't. I think I actually put that on Twitter. You know, somebody call that guy's mom. You can't. When the fullback hits you, you gotta start calling people's parents. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have a corner running up in the gap. Every time I saw a corner, it was like licking, you know, my chops, because you cannot physically do anything to stop me. I weigh 265 pounds on a good day. You weigh 135 pounds, like, I'm going to eat you up and spit you out. Like, it was easy.
Yeah.
And he just showed up right at, like, the prime time when, what's his name, had full speed, like, had the shoulder lowered. Like, yeah, he was going down.
Yeah, Stocke. But again, they've gotten Schnall involved in the pass game a little bit too. So they use their fullback. The fullback is not extinct at Wisconsin, and it couldn't be farther from the truth, actually, with what they've done so far here early in the year. Anything else that stood out to you here these first 2 weeks? I mean, I think the offense, just, you know, in terms of what they've done, 110 points, but none given up on the defensive end. And I know, yeah. I don't know how, I don't think South Florida's very good, and I don't think Central Michigan's very good, but that's back-to-back shutouts, and doing it the way they did, it wasn't really even close.
Right. I mean, Jimmy Leonard gets these guys right. I mean, they are really playing fast, high-powered football. I think he puts guys in the right spots to make plays. In the first quarter, Zach Bond came off the side and crushed the quarterback.
They need to block that guy.
That's demoralizing. You got to block that guy. He's one of the best guys on defense.
Yeah.
I think he has, two shutouts. That's just not normal, no matter how good a team is or how bad a team is. Like usually they had South Florida had opportunities. They couldn't. You know, I don't think Central Florida didn't really have many opportunities.
Central Michigan,
yeah. Central, whatever they are, because it doesn't matter what state they're in, they're terrible. Didn't they beat Albany? They beat my dad's team. Like, it was very sad for my dad.
week
before. They beat the Great Danes.
Yeah, I believe. Are they an FCS team, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. They're not a bowl team. Yeah. Was not impressive.
What's nice is, what's also good is we got, you know, Scott Nelson didn't play, so you're getting guys reps on the field against not our team.
Yeah.
So you're getting them game experience, which I think is huge. And a lot of guys are stepping up. It's kind of nice to see.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting turnovers, which has not always been our thing.
Wasn't last year.
We're making plays. And then, you know, we can talk about the defense all day, although I don't really care much about, you know, good job, guys. Keep it at zero.
Yeah.
You've got to talk. And I'm interested to hear what you think about Jack.
Yeah.
You're talking, first off, Quintez Cephas had one catch that was virtually impossible, you know, like over, basically looked up backwards. And he caught it, and it was a touchdown. And Jackson looks like he feels very comfortable. He hit every level. He hit, like, what, five, like, what, 7 to 9 receivers.
Yeah, I mean, they threw it. Some of the completions might have been Grammer or Chase, but they hit 11 different guys caught a pass last week.
Yeah, so I'm even off. 11 guys. Like, that's how you win football games. You know what was also what I really liked? He hits the short slant. Like, we've never been able to do that.
Well, and you got to take advantage of it. I mean, if they're giving up the middle of the field because you're running, kind of drawing the linebackers up, those slants should be there.
They should all, right. They've always been there. We just never threw it.
Yeah.
And I feel like Coach Chris, they just have more, I feel like they have a lot of confidence in Jack. And to be honest, like, yes, we still have a lot of season to go. But last game, he really showed me something. He threw two of those deep balls right in the breadbasket. He hit the crosses over the middle. You know, he's even checking down to the running backs. I mean, he's doing everything that, you know, we're asking him to do.
Yep.
I'm really excited to see what happens at Michigan.
Yeah, no, when that's going to be a big test. I mean, Michigan's defense has not been the issue for Michigan so far. It's been their offense. The offense has been very lackluster with the new offensive coordinator and everything like that. Their defense has been quite good. And I think, you know, the offensive line, Jesse and I talked about it earlier in the show, but they have not run blocked perhaps as well as they have in the past. Like, there's been some, Taylor averaged under 6 yards a carry, which is great for a lot of people, but it's not great for JT. You know what I mean? Like, he's a guy he's averaging 7, and the holes were not there a ton, but that's also why they end up throwing for 400 yards too. If you're going to take away the run, if you're going to limit it to Wisconsin to 4.5 yards a carry, congratulations, and then you're going to have to, you know, step up and play better pass defense than Central Michigan did, because they now have the confidence with Jack to do it. But you're right. I'm anxious to see what it looks like against a true Power 5 opponent that Michigan is. And if it looks good there, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe the expectations for the season change. But we'll figure out, I think, a lot of who this team is this week, this next weekend against Michigan.
Oh, I mean, I think this is like, you know, one of our biggest springboards. You know, it's Michigan at home. We're coming off a 63-0 win. Offense looks great. Defense is playing fantastic. You know, can we put it all together? Like, can we do it against, what is Michigan ranked? Top 10 now?
They were number 10 after last week, yeah.
Okay, so but can we do it against one of the best teams in the Big Ten and against a top 10 team? You know, I think this is, you know, we're coming off a bye. They're coming off a bye, too. Both teams are healthy. You know, Xander, I feel horrible for him.
Yeah, feel bad for him. Feel bad for Scott Nelson. Both obviously done for the year.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a tough, you know, it's a tough break. But again, Wisconsin, at least I should say, at tight end, losing Xander, I'm not sure how much they were counting on him just simply because of his injury history. But they certainly could have used him. And losing Scott is also a big hit. But I think that they have the guys at safety to fill in. But those are two spots that are really the tight end spots really hurting, and safety, you lose a little bit of depth there.
Yeah, you know, you hate to see guys going out for the season. It's sad because I can feel for them. I've been there, and it was the worst.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you had the Xander experience, right? I mean, you didn't get to finish your senior year. He didn't get to finish his senior. He didn't get to finish his senior. It was essentially the same thing as last year, or for you. I mean, you were gone. You, like, the Michigan game was what, either the third or fourth game of the year,
and the fourth game, yeah.
And that was it. I mean, last year he played in three games, and that was it. You know, so it's you certainly know how he's feeling. I'm sure.
I do. You know, you don't want to give the dream up, and I mean, I should have listened to. You know, sometimes football just tells you. It's over, dude. Like, you killed it for a while, and that's just it. And it sucks, and it's sad, but, you know, hopefully he's got his schooling all together.
He's going to med school. I mean, he's going.
So he can treat himself, and he can tell him to come treat me.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you got? You got Wisconsin this week, then?
Yeah.
Big, little,
this weekend, they definitely going to win.
Big, little, what do you got?
You know, I think Michigan always comes to play. I hate to say it and give him any props at all, but we should win by over two touchdowns. I think we could win by 17 or more. I think we win by 10.
All right.
So I think it's a tight game.
All right. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, dude, I'm just excited. I'm watching. All I do is watch reels. Don't tell anyone where I work of stuff on YouTube, and just watching these wide receivers. They're all exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a group that could rival, and I mean I know that some, and you played with these guys, but like the 2003 group with Lee Evans and Brandon Williams and Jonathan Orr and Darren Charles. I mean, that would be the group that I think you would compare to this one. But I think this one has a chance. I don't know if any of these guys are Lee Evans, but I think overall as a group, 1 through 4, it's a better group. But I don't know. I mean, B. Will caught so many passes and did so many great things. But I think the argument could be made that this is the best group of all time. It's one of the two, I think.
You know, and I'm interested to see how it progresses because we could say right now it's like kind of neck and neck, but shoot, in 6 to 8 weeks, it could be, these guys could be taking it by storm. I don't know if we'll ever see a Lee Evans again. I mean, that guy was just special.
Yeah. No, again, I think we've talked about this, but I've gone into the idea that we've already seen the best quarterback that we're ever going to see at Wisconsin, Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. and the best wide receiver we're going to see in Lee Evans. I was also saying that we had seen the best running back we were ever going to see when I was talking about Melvin Gordon, and now JT comes along. And so maybe we'll find and end up with a receiver, and we'll see a receiver that's better than what Lee Evans was, or, you know, maybe a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. But this group has a chance to be just as good, if not better, than that group for sure, at least in my opinion.
This group has a chance to be special for sure. We say it every year, but I mean, like, there's a lot of things together already.
Yeah, getting Cephas back is just, I mean, you can't really – huge. Quantify huge. How big he's been already in these first 2 weeks, not just in the pass game, but in the run game too. I mean, he blocks his butt off, and it shows. So we'll see how this plays out. Wisconsin to Michigan coming up this weekend. Matt will be in town to body Michigan people on the street, and we'll see how it plays out. Matt, thank you.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Matt Bernstein, former fullback for the Badgers.